Accession number 8837, roll number 2.
Winter Reel 2.
The standard arms and ammunition of a rifle company. The only additions were in extra ammunition, grenades, and that type of thing.
Did you expect to have any support from artillery or engineers when you got there?
We might have had engineers. We were not too expectant of the artillery, because we knew that they won't take any transport. In fact, they did take some guns, but we never saw them. I heard later that the ammunition had been on another ship which had been sunk.
Where did you go to on the Norwegian coast?
Well, we, after embarkation, the plan with which we had spent the last couple of days trying to perfect was changed. For some reason, rumour had it, and this is pure rumour, there was a German pocket battleship in Trondheim Fjord. So we were no longer going to Trondheim. I don't think that was the true reason. Anyway, we didn't go to Trondheim. We were diverted to Arnaldsnes. And of course, a different plan, because we were now no longer aiming on Trondheim. We were to go south to join up with the Norwegian army down the long valley between Arnaldsnes and the south of Norway.
Were you told that at the time?
Yes. So we landed in the dark, early morning before light, and entrained on a Norwegian train of mixed stock, I myself, being slow getting aboard, found myself in an open coal truck. I was intrigued to notice that the staff captain from the brigade was standing on the footplate of the engine, brandishing a pistol to ensure that the driver took the train. We then rode in this train for some number of hours, I can't remember, two or three, as far as Donbas, where we detrained and bivouacked in the woods outside the town. This was lucky, because shortly after arrival, it now being daylight, I witnessed for the first time an air raid. German planes bombing the little town of Donbas.
Can you describe what it looked like?
Well, it appeared to be all done in slow motion. This, I say, was my first experience of an air raid, and the planes appeared to come so slowly and drop their bombs, which came down and caused considerable damage to this little town. Of course, a lot of the buildings were wooden structures, or predominantly wood, and the were particularly susceptible to bombing. This went on throughout the day, including strafing of any anything really that moved, civilian or military. To my surprise, and it's been my undying surprise, having survived the war and seen later air raids, the company brought down with small arms fire three German airplanes. I've never seen that happen since. But I think the Germans were unused to having opposition. We were unused to air raids, and the combination of the two made carelessness on the part of the Germans, who were low, slow, and unworried, and extreme enthusiasm on the part of the British soldier. But by sheer weight of small arms, we brought down three planes.
Did the Germans parachute out?
Two didn't. Two planes didn't. One, I think one did, yes. The other two planes, in fact, tried to fly, to fly out of it, but in fact got themselves caught on the steep slopes of the surrounding hills.
Was any attempt made to capture the crew?
Oh yes, but they were dead. All the crew were died in their seats. There were only two in each plane, pilot and bomber or co-pilot.
So troops were sent out to the site of the crash, were they?
Yes, I took a platoon out. I took my platoon out to one plane, but they were both dead. Not a lot of damage to the plane. In fact, I suspect that by sheer luck, it was injury to the pilot which had caused the crash.
Did you take anything from the bodies?
There was nothing to take other than the identity discs, and they were very well prepared, the German. There was nothing. There was identity discs and the normal paraphernalia, handkerchief, pipe, that sort of thing.
Did you take the identity discs?
Yes, they were handed in to company headquarters and presumably went back.
Which units had gone to Donbass?
My company was in Donbass. I understood that the KYLI had gone through south of Donbass. They'd gone through ahead of us, south of Donbass.
You said that the officer brandished a pistol. Do you think that was necessary, or was it just...
I don't know whether it was joie de vivre or whether it was really necessary. At that stage, I think not.
What happened to you next?
We stayed in the wooded area about 24 hours when we were joined by the rest of the battalion and moved with them further south to take up a defensive position through which the KYLI would eventually withdraw. We went to a small village south of Otter. I think it was called Soja or something like that. And here the battalion was to... The battalion sent one company forward to assist the KYLI, and the remainder of the battalion took up a defensive position across the valley. The river and the road in a narrow valley with A and B companies on the right and D company on the left, spreading up the hills on either side, and the valley in the middle, which was very narrow, had some elements of headquarter company, the anti-tank platoon, and one or two other of the headquarter company platoons looking after it.
Which was your company?
I was D company. I was on the left. We were the one company on the left. And we set about digging in the normal way, but quickly discovered that the topsoil was only a matter of six to 12 inches deep. Thereafter, it was solid rock. This gives us a distinct blow. However, company commander reminded us that if you couldn't dig down, you built up. So we did what we could to chop trees, small trees, and form sangars, trees reinforced by rocks and filled in with bits of earth. It wasn't as satisfactory as being able to dig a weapon pit or a slit trench, if nothing more than the fact that you were exposed above ground and it was more difficult to hide. And also, it wasn't 100% bulletproof, but we did what we could. It also took, it was very slow, it took much longer than digging. We spent the whole of that day, when we weren't interrupted by air raids, in preparing the defences. During the night, we were told that the KYLI would be withdrawing and we would be the front line.
Did it take you by surprise that there was already this talk of withdrawal?
Well, it did me, yes. We literally arrived, took up a defensive position, and thereafter all movement was backwards. It did. This, of course, there were many reasons for this, none of which I was aware of at the time. I have learned later. I don't think this is the moment to go into those.
Well, we can go into it later. Mm. So I interrupted you where you said that you had the news that the...
KYLI would be withdrawing during the night. This was successfully achieved with no alarm or excursion. Following morning, we were still completing our sangars and defences, and we came under artillery gunfire. This wasn't particularly harassing at the moment because they were some way back and they were merely firing on the hills as such and not on individual targets, so it wasn't too bad. We had air raid, the odd air raid again. Then, as by about late morning, we started seeing the Germans. We could see motorcyclists, obviously the vanguard, and then we saw light tanks, but they were out of range, so we merely noted them and prepared ourselves. The artillery fire increased, and the air raids, which were both bombing and strafing, they They were only small bombs, but if you're an infantryman, they're just as much damage. You didn't have to have these large things that blew up half a town. And that increased considerably during the day. And gradually we saw the enemy working their way, coming gradually nearer and nearer, approaching. When the tanks came within range, we tried out our boys' anti-tank rifle. This was extremely accurate, but completely ineffective. It bounced off the front of the tank, the projectile, we could see it. That didn't surprise me because the front of the tank is obviously the heaviest armoured. But what disappointed me was that it bounced off the tracks, doing no good at all. We hoped that perhaps, with a bit of luck, we could have ripped the track from a tank. So the boy's anti-tank rifle didn't impress us very much.
And what kind of range was this?
This was about 350, 400 yards. Fortunately, the two anti-tank two-pounder, which the battalion was equipped, and which was in the centre of the valley, they were quite effective. They were very effective, which was just as well. In fact, they were the only supporting weapon we had. As the advance got nearer, they started incendiary shells. This was very trying. Because although the snow was still on the ground and it was intensely cold at night, it was very dry. And the conifers, which were the predominant trees in those parts, caught fire. The undergrowth caught fire and the trees caught fire.
Was there anything that could be done about it?
We tried beating out the flames, but it's not a quick job, as you're probably well aware. Beating out flames with the normal beater is never a quick job, and if you haven't got a beater and you're improvising with somebody's battle dress jacket, and the odd bits of cloth you can find about the place and a shovel, it doesn't go very quickly. And gradually, the fire took a hold to such an extent that the company was forced to change positions. The enemy at that moment, the Germans at that moment, were infiltrating round to our left, which was higher up the hill, round the other side of the flames. So it wasn't easy to re-establish ourselves.
How frightening was all this?
I was very frightened. I didn't care for... I think the flames were possibly more frightening than the menacing approach of the enemy. It was the bushfire effect, which is very frightening. That, coupled with every time you poked your head up, somebody shot at it, was quite an... interesting experience.
Were you taking many casualties?
Yes. Well, not until we had to relinquish our posts. Then, of course, we were vulnerable to anything that was going. Then we started losing casualties. The company commander, a splendid fellow called Major Walters, Bandit Bob Walters, he was a very dashing officer, first-class chap. He led a counterattack, but unfortunately was killed. And although it delayed the advance, it didn't stop it. We managed to delay the advance until dark. And although we'd lost a portion of our front, the platoons nearest the road managed to hold on. We then got the order to withdraw behind the Green Howards, who were behind us. This battle was taking place in a long valley with each battalion behind the other. So we were to withdraw during the night to a position behind the Green Howards. Having issued those orders to my platoon, it was then discovered that the enemy had got round the flank of the fire of D Company, our company, and had established a post across the road, across the middle of the road. So a platoon was sent to eject it, not from D Company, from one of the other companies. A platoon was sent to deal with that, which I think it did. It cleared the road to a certain extent, but it cleared the road physically, but the road was still under fire from Germans, which he couldn't locate. So when our turn came to withdraw down this road, we left the road and went round in a circle up the side of the hill, getting round behind the Germans. Germans were terribly keen on incendiary or incendiary bullets, and they had a much higher percentage of tracer in their ammunition than we had, whereas we had the tracer coming out every fifth or sixth round. They appeared to have it almost alternate rounds. First time you saw tracer, it was most alarming, but very quickly you realized it was a blessing in disguise. One could, with a certain amount of impunity, crawl under the line of the tracer going above your head, whereas had they not had tracer, we wouldn't have known where the rounds were, and with the disastrous results. But as they were using so much tracer, certainly my platoon, or what was left of it, managed to crawl happily underneath the line of the projectiles and get round the enemy and back onto the road again.
So what was the advantage in using tracer?
There was no advantage at all. I never understood why they had so much tracer. One normally uses tracer if you want to see where your round goes. Possibly if you were zeroing or aiming or to see exactly where the round goes. But why the Germans used such a high proportion of tracer at night quite defeated the object of their firing, because everybody was able to crawl under it, or at least know where it was and take some other evasive action. So ever since then, I've been really quite fond of tracer from an enemy point of view.
And how many Germans were advancing on you? Could you get some impression of that?
No, I would think about a battalion. I don't know. Perhaps a brigade. Difficult. About a brigade, I should think. The attack, apart from the fire hazard, the attack was not all that desperate. Had we had any supporting weapons, had we had gunfire or mortars which we could have covered our front, obscured their forming up, that sort of thing, disrupted their forming up, we'd have been there to this day. But as we had no supporting weapons whatsoever, other than the two-pounder anti-tank guns, that coupled with their fire-raising efforts was the thing that called the day.
What about the German air support? Was that decisive?
That was extremely trying. That they, again, you see, we had no, the only reply to the German air support was small arms. And once they'd learnt from Donbass that chaps got shot down, they just kept that little bit higher, which didn't have to be terribly high, because all we could reply to them was with short, small arms. Had we had Bofors or any of the anti-tank weapons, we could have kept them out of the way. Therefore, detracting from their accuracy and generally improving the situation.
What happened next?
Well, we finally got round the Germans and went back to the outskirts of Otta, where we tried to form another defensive position to hold when the Greenhards, in due course, withdrew through. And we formed makeshift positions on the outskirts of Otta. My arc of fire was from a deserted house, farmhouse. And we were using the buildings mostly in this village because of the difficulty of concealing oneself outside and the shortage of time. You see, the Greenhards were coming back within the next 12 hours. So one hadn't time to build these Sanger or any other edifices. We were using sandbags and that type of thing from existing buildings. That night, we were to withdraw back to Donbass by train. we which we my platoon certainly accomplished successfully. The second